Hey everyone, I'm glad you are enjoying your hot dog. We have a hot dog winner tonight, Jonah Rosenblatt, with the most delicious looking hot dog we announced. If you win four times, you'll go on the Hot Dog Hall of Fame here on Thursday nights. So Jonah, congratulations on winning the inaugural hot dog winner for tonight. Okay, we are grateful to our sponsors for this evening. Sponsored by Dr. Michael and Marilyn Fedak and gratitude for the many weekly learning opportunities at BRS. We're grateful for the Fedaks for their sponsorship. Also tonight, a very special sponsor, sponsored by Yael and Jeremy Rosenbaum, my dear friend, JJ in Refuah Shleima for his sister-in-law, Ilana Chana Bat Gila Breinla, who happens to also be a very dear friend of my sister's, who is in need of a Refuah Shleima. So if I could ask everyone to add her to their tefilos, Ilana Chana Bas Gila Breinla, and again, our learning should be for Refuah Shleima for her, Besok Sha'ar Cholei Yisrael, and I thank them for their sponsorship. And as always, again, we learn Le'alias Neshama Esther Tila Bas Gavriel Pinchas. Okay, we have three amazing ideas tonight. In fact, as I was heading out of the house, someone who I might be married to said, which is your favorite idea? I said, I actually like one of them the best, but I already know which one I'm going to get the most fiery about. So I'll let you guys decide afterwards which one I like the best and which one I got the most fiery about, but I will leave that as the cliffhanger. Okay, idea number one comes from Rav Druk. Rav Druk has a magnificent, magnificent idea. Of course, at the beginning of the Parsha, Yaakov is nearing his end, and he calls Yosef in. Now, what's he calling Yosef in? He's calling Yosef in because he does not want to be buried in Mitzrayim, and he asks Yosef to promise him that he's going to be taken out of Mitzrayim and buried in Kivrei Avos, which we'll get to in the second idea. But as part of that process, there's a very strange promise that takes place. The Pasuk says, Vayikra livno li Yosef, he calls Yosef, and he says, "Imna matzasi chem beinecha, sim na yarcha tachas yireki, ve'asisa imadi chesed ve'ames." He says, "Yosef, I want you to make me a promise, and the promise is, al na sikbereinu b'mitzrayim. Please don't make it that I'm buried in Mitzrayim. Why? V'shachavti imavosai, because I want to be buried with my forefathers." And Yosef says, "Ve'yomer anochi escha esev kidvarecha." He says, "I'm going to do as you asked me." And then the Pasuk says, Vayomer Yishavali. Yaakov doesn't believe Yosef. He says, promise me. Vayishavalo. So Yosef promises Yaakov. And then the second Yosef promises Yaakov, Vayishtachu Yisrael al Rosh Amita. Yaakov is so overwhelmed with gratitude that he falls down on the bed. Says Rashi, what's he falling down on his bed? So Rashi gives a few options. And then one of the options Rashi says is he is now overwhelmed with gratitude. Why? Al shahaisa mitaso shlema velo haya barasha. Because Yaakov Avinu realizes that Yosef is not going is going to have a perfect lineage. There's no one wicked that's going to be in his lineage. Shehaya Yosef melech, because Yosef was a king. And even though he was in exile, he remained tzaddik. And his descendants are going to remain tzaddikim. And so Yaakov is so overwhelmed by Yosef's righteousness that he falls down. He says, thank you, Hashem, that even though Yosef was in Egypt, he remained a tzaddik. Ask Rav Druk such an obvious question. How many years has Yaakov been in Mitzrayim when this story happens at the beginning of our parsha? 17 years, okay? If you were with Yosef for 17 years, wouldn't you have already known that Yosef was a tzaddik? Why now, because Yosef makes this promise, all of a sudden realize Yaakov has this epiphany, Yosef's a tzaddik, and even though he was in Mitzrayim for all these years, he remained a tzaddik, and therefore I am overwhelmed with gratitude. Ask Rav Druk, for 17 years he didn't realize Yosef was a tzaddik? For 17 years he didn't realize that even though Yosef had been in Mitzrayim for 22 years before Yaakov came down, and he was a righteous person, he maintained his connection with Torah and mitzvos, Judaism, what we'll call it, or to his family, his Mesorah. What about this story that he made a promise that he wouldn't be buried in Mitzrayim? All of a sudden now, Yaakov has this epiphany that he's all of a sudden realizing that Yosef is a tzaddik? It's a good question. So he says in the third paragraph, he says, Im rak achshav, higi hazman lahodos l'kadosh baruch hu sheYosef tzaddik. All of a sudden, he has this epiphany. Rak achshav v'yishtachu al rosh amita. So much so that he throws, so to speak, a sudas hodah. He thanks Hashem. Umahaya shvasrei shanim b'mitzrayim. 17 years, Yaakov is seeing Yosef. He doesn't realize that Yosef was a righteous person. It's a gewaldig akasha. I'm guessing none of us were bothered by this question, but the second I saw Rav Druk's question, I thought it was amazing. Says Rav Druk the following, and I'm gonna extrapolate upon what Rav Druk is saying a little bit within my own words, but this is what I think the answer is. He says, you see, it's very easy to be a righteous person in public. When Yaakov saw Yosef's public persona, and he saw that in public he was a certain way, so there's nothing really special about that. Okay, if you are in shul on Wednesday morning, a Shabbos morning, or at Ne'ilah, and you are shuckling back and forth, nothing so impressive about that. Okay, anyone who finds himself in a public setting, by and large, is going to act the part, is going to act religious. You know what's much more impressive than the guy who in public acts that way? Is someone who does that in private. Is someone who, when the camera's off and no one's paying attention and there's no one else around, if they still act in that way, that's what's very impressive. Says Rav Druk that for 17 years, Yaakov saw Yosef's public persona. He saw him as the viceroy of Egypt. He saw him behave a certain way in public. Yaakov wasn't impressed by that, because anyone can act that way in public. Anyone can put on a show. Anyone can put on a facade. But now, who's there? It's just Yaakov and Yosef. Yaakov is looking Yosef in the face, and the camera's off, and there's no publicity, and there's no fanfare. And all of a sudden, he sees that Yosef does the right thing because it's the right thing. He sees that Yosef is still at tzaddik when no one else is paying attention. And then Yaakov says, now I know that everything I've been seeing in public is reinforced by his behavior in private. He actually goes on here of Druk. He says, that's why. He says, if you ask me what the most important tefillah a person can say is, so I would have said the most important, maybe Shmona Esrei, how long their Shmona Esrei is. Maybe someone would say, oh, I had a great story. I'll tell it to you after the recording's off. But I got a call from someone in a different community. So they had a scholar residence. I said, how was the scholar residence? What was the only thing they said about the scholar residence? They commented on how long Shmona Esrei is. I was like, if that's the only thing you took away from that Shabbos was the length of Shmona Esrei, I feel very bad for you, right? So in public, anyone could have a long Shmona Esrei, says Rav Druk. Anyone could have a Shema that goes on forever. He says, you want to know what the most important, most impressive tefillah is? Kriyat Shema Lamita. Kriyat Shema Lamita is when no one else is paying attention. Everyone else in your house is asleep. There's no one around you. There's no video camera on. The only one who knows whether you said Kriyat Shema Lamita with Kavana or not is?
You and Hashem.
You and Hashem. Right? I had a Rebbe once who had a different variation of this. He thought that the way you wash your hands for Netilas Yadayim was the ultimate testimony to your religious observance. Because again, Netilas Yadayim, whether you wash it properly, don't wash it properly, how much of it do you wash, do you know the halacha? Again, most people aren't paying attention to how someone else is watching Netilas Yadayim. The only one who really knows whether you wash your hands properly is Hashem. Rav Druk says that's Kriyat Shema Lamita. When you get into bed at night and you have every excuse not to say it, and you're exhausted, and everyone in your house, and you just want to go to sleep, you just want to decompress, maybe you want to read an article on your phone, whatever it is you do to get yourself to bed. No one's going to know whether you said Kriyat Shema Lamita tonight or not. No one's going to know whether you said it with Kavana, without Kavana, whether you had intentions for your... No one's going to know anything. There's only one person in the entire world that's going to know whether you said Kriyat Shema Lamita, and that's Hashem. So that's what Rav Druk says. He says that's what gave Yaakov the gratitude at this moment. He saw Yosef for 17 years practice Judaism in public. He said, I'm not impressed by that. Anyone can have a long Shmona Esrei. Anyone can take a long time for Shema. Anyone when they get up for a big drusha and they make the bracha on the bottle of water, all right, anyone could do that. That's not an impressive thing. But if you do that when you're in your house by yourself and no one else is paying attention, that's an impressive bracha. So he says here, now this is gonna blow your mind. He says in the second to last paragraph, he says, when Yaakov gives the bracha to Yosef, it says, Vatesha be'esan kashto vayafozu zore yadav. Again, it's a very obscure pasuk. We're not going to get into it right now. But he says, the Targum Unculus on there translates that what is Yaakov knows is about Yosef? Kayim oraisa besisre. That the greatness of Yosef was that he was makayim the Torah besiser in private. In other words, this is the second to last paragraph on page number one. In other words, what made Yosef so impressive in Yaakov's mind was not everything he did in public, but rather Kayim Oraisa B'Sisrei. that he was able to fulfill the Torah in private. He said Kriyat Shema Alamita. He washed his hands. He said a bracha when no one else was at the table with him. That at late at night, he sat for 5 minutes and learned a little. Things that nobody else would ever know. That, says Yaakov Avinu, was the greatest testament to who Yosef was. Not his public persona, but his private persona. And therefore, in the bracha that he gives Yosef, the Unkelus translates it as Kayim Oraisa B'Sisrei. The greatness of Yosef was that he accepted the Torah in private. Not when anyone else knew about it. And of course, if we were giving a Parsha Shir now, we could trace this throughout Yosef's life. The incident of Yosef and Potiphar, would anyone have known about it? No one else would have known about it. It was Yosef's internal moral compass that prevented him from sinning with Ashes Potiphar. Why? No one else knew. There was no camera there. There was no one knowing about it. There's no one going to be publicized. In fact, it hurt him publicly by not doing it. But Yosef made that decision. That was the greatness of Yosef. Says Rudruk, that is the testament to our Judaism. Not what we do in public, but the Jews that we are in private. And I'll extrapolate upon this. And I know I'm going over my 10 minutes for each idea. This doesn't just apply bein adam l'makom, it applies bein adam l'chavero. Anyone can be nice in public. Anyone can walk into the shir tonight with a smile on their face and treat everyone with respect and let someone else go in front of them to get the hot dog and maybe pour some ketchup for someone else. Anyone can do that in public. That doesn't impress me about your midos. You know what impresses me about your midos? The way you speak to a spouse, the way you speak to a child, the way you speak to a parent. It's those conversations which sometimes the people we're closest to, it's the hardest to be nice to. It's the way you treat that person. Again, when no one else is going to know about it. And no one else is going to have fanfare. No one else is going to give you an award for it. But you say a kind word. You say please or thank you. You recognize someone's contribution to the house. When you do stuff like that, that's what's going to impress me. So I think this idea doesn't just apply between you and Hashem and Torah mitzvahs. It applies to the way we behave to each other. You hold the door for someone when no one else is looking? That I'm impressed with. That I'm impressed with. You say please or thank you to a custodian, to a security guard, to whatever, when no one else is around you? That I'm impressed with. Being nice when everyone else is around? That's easy. Doing it when the camera's off and when no one else is knowing, that is what I find impressive. That is idea number one from Rav Druk. Okay, idea number two comes from someone who I admire tremendously. I quote him often, Rabbi Alex Israel. He's been to our community many times. Now, Rabbi Alex Israel does not say the idea that I'm going to say. He put me on the 10-yard line, and I'm going to take it into the end zone. And I hope it's a fulfillment of what he had intended. And if not, I apologize to him. But Alex Israel points out something that I myself might not have fully appreciated. And that is that if you look in this Parsha, Yaakov Avinu asked to be buried in Eretz Yisrael twice. Right at the beginning of our Parsha, he speaks to Yosef. That was the story we just reflected upon. And he mentions, I'm going to read the Pasuk. He says, Simi na yarcha tachas yerechivi asisi mecheseb re'emes, al na tikrevenu b'mitzrayim. Yaakov looks at Yosef and says, please do not what? Bury me in Mitzrayim. Then, later on in the Parsha, Yaakov comes back. This time, all of the brothers are there. All of the Shiftei Ka are there. And he once again reiterates his plea not to be buried. Only here, it's a very different phraseology. Here he says to the Shiftei Ka, he says to his sons, Vayitzav osam vayomar aleim ani ne'asaf el ami. He says, my time is passing. Kivriosi el avosai el amara asher b'stei Ephron. Now, if you notice the pasuk, he's not talking about where he does not want to be buried, but rather where he does want to be buried. And if you go on the next pasuk, b'mara asher b'stei machpelah, he goes through this whole thing about Hebron and about Maras Machpelah, Shama Kivruas Avram v'Sarah. He tells the whole story of Maras Machpelah. So you have two stories. And again, I myself might not fully appreciate this. One story was to Yosef at the beginning of the Parsha. And if you read the Pasuk, it's very clear. It's where he does not want to be buried. He does not want to be buried in Mitzrayim. And idea number two, when he comes later on, is he reinforces his idea. Only now, it's not that he doesn't want to be buried in Mitzrayim. Now it's where he does want to be buried. He wants to be buried in Eretz Yisrael, in Hebron, Maras Machpelah, Kivrei Avosai. Why is that the case? That was Rabbi Alex Israel's preface. That was his setting the stage for us. Now's where I'm going to take us into the end zone. I think that what Yaakov Avinu is really describing was two relationships that we have with Eretz Yisrael. One relationship with Eretz Yisrael is what it is an escape from. Right? Yaakov did not want to be buried in Eretz Yisrael because he did not want to be buried in Mitzrayim. Why? Because Mitzrayim was a place of Tumah, and for all the reasons not. He wanted to go to Eretz Yisrael because he wanted to get away from something else. There's another component to our relationship with Eretz Yisrael. And that is not because we're running away from something that we don't want to be in, but rather we're running towards something that is so meaningful and holy to us that it has meaning not because we're escaping from something, but because we're running towards something. I think this idea very much spoke to me in the way that I developed it just now for two reasons. Number one, Rabbi Soloveitchik speaks about this in broader terms, where he says that there are two things that connect us together. There are two things that connect us as Jewish people. One is he calls fate, and the other he calls destiny. Fate essentially means that you know what brings us all together? What brings everybody who's enjoying a hot dog together tonight is not just the hot dogs. What brings us together is that for 2,000 years, you and I and our ancestors and our bubbies and zadies, they suffered together. They suffered in Lithuania and in Poland and in Russia and in Yemen and in Egypt. Oh, you pick the country. Our ancestors suffered together. They suffered because they're Jews, and therefore it binds us all together. That's called a people of fate. Our fate is the same, and that's what bridges us together. But there's a limit to that. So Rabbi Soloveitchik says there has to be another component to what brings us together. And that's not fate, but that's destiny. It's not what we're running away from, but it's what we're running towards. You and I don't just share a common fate. It's not just there our Bubby and Zetas were persecuted together and they sat in the gas chambers together and therefore we're all bound together. But we actually have a common destiny. We have a common language called Torah and mitzvos. We have a destiny in Eretz Yisrael with Mashiach and the building of the Beis HaMikdash. So what binds us together is not just a painful past, but rather it is a hopeful future. That's how Rabbi Soloveitchik developed it, fate and destiny. And I think that very much fits into this idea. Yaakov Avinu was looking at his sons and saying, don't bury me in Mitzrayim. In other words, don't let the only thing that's going to unite you being what we were in the past. We were all in Mitzrayim together. We all suffered in Mitzrayim together. That's what bound us together. Yaakov Avinu is saying there has to be something more. It's not what you're running away from, but it's what you're running towards. And so in his second command to his children, he ignores Mitzrayim. He says, don't forget everything we've gone through Mitzrayim. There's something bigger and more important that binds you together, and that is going towards something. It's going towards Eretz Yisrael. It's not just being a people of fate, but it's being a people of destiny. But I think there's an additional level to that. And again, this is the part that spoke particularly to me. There are two types of people that make Aliyah nowadays. There are two types of people that yearn and crave to go to Eretz Yisrael nowadays. There's two different conversations about Eretz Yisrael. Certainly in America, I know there are people who live in Israel. I know JJ's going to listen to this. I'm sure I'm going to get feedback from it. But I can speak for myself, living in Boca Raton 2025, and the people that I speak to regularly, 26, thank you, speak to regularly. There are people that speak about Aliyah and moving to Eretz Yisrael because of what America has become and what Chutz La'aretz has become. They look at the trajectory, they look at Mamdani, they look at the right, they look at the left, they look at the challenges, and they say that America in 5, 10, 15, 20 years, or maybe even now, is no longer going to be hospitable to the Jews, and therefore we have to get out. And therefore Aliyah becomes something that you're running away from. You're running away from Egypt. You're running away from America. You're running away from the diaspora because of the either spiritual or physical dangers that exist here. But Yaakov says that it can't just be that. It can't just be that you're running away from something else. It has to be that you're running towards something. You have to want it because of what it represents, not just as a safe haven for Jews from persecution, anti-Semitism around the world, but because we recognize that Eretz Yisrael is the center of the world. It is our destiny. It is our history, our destiny. It's where the Beis HaMikdash is going to be rebuilt. It's where there's extra Kedusha. It's Avira de Eretz Yisrael Machkim. It's where our Avos walked. It's where our Avos are buried. It's where Tanakh played out. It's where our history unfolded. And therefore, I'm going there not because I'm running away from something. Yaakov said it can't just be that. Your relationship to Eretz Yisrael can't just be because you're running away from something. It's not Uganda. And it's not anywhere else. We could have had other places that were probably a lot safer for us. And there were people throughout history that wanted to choose those places because they were more isolated and arguably more safe. That's not why we daven for 2,000 years for a homeland. We didn't just daven because there was persecution and we needed a safe haven. There were those, but for us as religious Jews, we daven because it represented so much more. We weren't just running away from something, we were running towards something. And I believe, humbly, based on this insight from Rabbi Alex Israel, that this is what Yaakov Avinu is communicating to his children. First, he comes to Yosef and he says, bury me in Eretz Yisrael because I don't want to be buried in Mitzrayim. That you have to get away. You have to get away from the danger, and you have to get away from the anti-Semitism, and you have to get away from the spiritual dangers that exist in exile. So it's what I don't want. And then he comes back to his sons, but that can't be the entire story of your history. It can't just be running away from something. It has to be running towards something. And so for those of us, and we talk about this unabashedly, when we talk about going to Eretz Yisrael, that it's not if, but it's when. It can't just be that I'm waiting till the last second when anti-Semitism hits that breaking point, and then I'm gonna, it has to be that the craving and the yearning is for something more. It's for the Kedusha. It's to be part of Jewish history as it unfolds in our homeland. It's not just running away from something, it's running away towards something. And that is Yaakov Avinu in the two stories that he tells of where he wants to be buried and where he does not want to be buried. So idea number one from Rabbi Druck about the idea of, I already forgot idea number one, I got so involved in idea number two. Idea number one came from Rav Druck, again, that we can't just be Jewish in public, it's what we do in private that is the ultimate definition of our Judaism. Idea number two from our Rabbi Alex Israel, that a relationship to Eretz Yisrael can't just be one of fate, but it also has to be one of destiny. Okay, idea number three. Comes from a sefer I'd never seen before, it's called Musar HaParsha, Shmuel ben Michael Peretz. Okay, you can find it on Otzer HaChachma. He has a beautiful insight. So, of course, we know very famously this week's parsha is the bracha that we give children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren every Friday night. Yisimcha Elokim ke'efrayim v'chem nasha. We spoke about it a little bit last week, a beautiful idea, the chizkuni, why they switch their hands. Really beautiful insight. Okay? Why here do we give the bracha specifically to Ephraim Menashe? The famous question, why not the bracha of Reuven? Why not the bracha of Yosef? Why not the bracha of... Why the bracha of Ephraim and Menashe specifically do we choose as the brachas that for eternity we are going to give to Jewish boys and we'll call, say, girls as well? Hey, that's the question. So he gives a few of the famous suggestions. Maybe it's because there was no jealousy between Ephraim and Menashe, and so therefore we want to communicate to our children that they should never be jealous with one another. Maybe it should be that they grew up in a hostile spiritual environment in Egypt and yet they emerged as Torah Jews, and that's the bracha that we give to our children, is that even though they grew up in difficult societies, we give them a bracha that they should always maintain Yiddishkeit. He quotes here something I've never seen before. Why Ephraim and Menashe, even though Menashe is older? He says, because you would think, what was Menashe? So Ephraim was the one who learned Torah. He was the one who sat by Yaakov's side. Who was Menashe? Menashe was the one who was the impressive, you know, leader. He was wealthy. He goes on giving sources. He was the good-looking one. He was the big wise. He had the money. He had the power. So you might think that the bracha we give to our children is Menashe Ephraim. That really, I want my kid to be successful and that they can fit Judaism on the side, Matova Manai. He says, no. Yaakov Dafka put Ephraim before Menashe to say that our children should have both, Mirtz Hashem, Moshe, you should have both, right? The Menashe and the Ephraim. But we put Ephraim first. We put Ephraim first because we recognize, as he says here, She'alima Torah shel Ephraim over es kol chamudos ha'olam. That really, when push comes to shove, if we were given the choice between material success and spiritual success, we want our children to be spiritually successful. But that's not what I want to share with you. I wanted to share with you an unbelievable reading in the Psukim. Unbelievable. I never fully appreciated this until this sefer pointed it out. When Yosef brings in Ephraim and Menashe, Yaakov says something that's haunting. Yaakov looks at him and says, "Vayar Yisrael es b'nei Yosef, vayomer mi'ela, mi'ela." Now, that to me is the most scary line in the entire Torah, because there's really like an existential question there. He knew who they were. What he's really asking is like, mi'ela, like, are they part of Egypt? Or are they part of us? Right? Like, who are you? Do you belong to your culture or do you belong to our family? So to me, that's like one of the most haunting questions in the Torah. Says Rashi, on that pasuk, mi'ela, pay attention. Rashi says, bikesh levarcham. Yaakov wanted to give Ephraim Menashe a bracha, v'nistalka shechina mimena. But Hashem removed Ruach HaKodesh from him. Why? Because Yaakov looks at the sons and says, mi'ela, meheichan yatsu elu she'enim ruin lebracha. Yaakov sees that Menashe and Ephraim's lineage is not going to be so great. That bad people are going to come from Ephraim and Menashe. And so Yaakov looks at Ephraim Menashe, he says, Mi'ela, how could it be that I could give you a bracha? You're not worthy of a bracha because your descendants are going to be impure. Your descendants are going to be bad people. So v'nistalkim v'nashchina, Hashem prevents him from saying the bracha. What happened, says Rashi? Vayomer Yosef el aviv b'nayim ashir nasan li elokim bazeh. Yosef looks back at Yaakov and says, no, Tati, they're my children. Says Rashi again, Bikesh Yosef rachamim al adavar. Yosef davin to Hashem, v'nacha alav ruach hakodesh, and ruach hakodesh reappeared to Yaakov Avinu, and then Yaakov Avinu was able to give the bracha Yisimcha elokim kefraim v'nashe. Okay, this is based on the Medrash. You can look at that yourself. So let's just follow the flow of the psukim, because it's unbelievable. Yaakov goes to give a bracha to Ephraim Menashe. Yaakov sees that Ephraim Menashe are not perfect. And he goes blank. He says, I can't give them a bracha. They're not worthy of a bracha because they're not perfect. What changes it? Yosef comes along, davens to Hashem, that despite the fact that Ephraim Menashe are not perfect, they should be worthy of the bracha. The second he finishes that tefillah, now Yaakov is able to give him the bracha of Yisimcha Elokim b'Ephraim Menashe. Comes along the Sefer Musar Parsha, turn the page to the last page, and he says something unbelievable happened in the way we just painted the picture of the psukim. Because of the tefillah of Yosef, even though Ephraim and Menashe are not perfect, they become worthy of a bracha. Right? Prior to that, they were not worthy of the bracha. All of a sudden, Yosef davens for them, and now they become worthy of the bracha. He says, Haresha al yedei tefillah, shina Yosef es banav, shiruim lebracha. Yosef now makes them worthy of the bracha. V'ze mashem lamdenu bebracha zo yisimcha elokim v'chevraim v'nashe. He says, now you understand the depth of the bracha that we give to children and grandchildren every Friday night when we say yisimcha elokim v'chevraim v'nashe. Listen to these words carefully. Even if there are going to be times when your children are not worthy of the bracha, sometimes, not in my house, Baruch Hashem, never on Friday night, sometimes children disappoint you. Sometimes children fall short. Sometimes children make mistakes. Sometimes children don't live up to your standards. Sometimes your kids might fight at the dining room table on Friday night and you're ready to strangle them. Sometimes they might not have helped set the table and you're ready to, not in my house, again, as I said, right? Sometimes, afal pi shelo yiruim, and sometimes you say to yourself, what am I giving them the bracha for? I want to strangle them right now. Or they're not, they've disappointed me. Or they've done stuff that have fallen short. Afal pi shelo yiruim nasu ruim al yedei tefila. But by this tefila, the tefillah we give to our children of Yisimcha Elokim k'Ephraim v'Menashe is that we should turn them from unworthy to worthy. That the same way Yaakov and Yosef were able to turn Ephraim v'Menashe from unworthy to worthy, that, he says, is the real tefillah we give to our children every Friday night. That even though there are times you disappoint me, and even though there are times you might fall short, and even though there are times I want to strangle you, and even though there are times we disagree on things, but Yisimcha Elokim k'Ephraim v'Menashe. My tefillah is, look at his Lord. He says, my tefillah is that you should become roi. You should become roi to this tefillah. He says, "Afal pi shelo yiruim nasu ruim ayidei tefillah." That's what this tefillah means. V'zema shebayim lelame ledoros habayim. This is the lesson that Yaakov Avinu was teaching us for generations. Lo lihit yaish. Never to give up on your children or grandchildren or great-grandchildren, no matter how much they disappoint you and no matter how much they may have fallen. Even if there's someone who's not worthy for the bracha, and they might have disappointed you, al yedei tefila, through this bracha we give, yucho la'alos b'malos ha'torah v'yira. That's the bracha of Yisimcha Elokim k'Ephraim v'Menashe. It's not just about, oh, they were raised in Egypt and that there was no jealousy. No, the real bracha is that Yaakov looked at Ephraim and Menashe and he says, you know what? They're not going to be perfect. And for a moment there, he's unable to give them a bracha. Yosef comes along and says, no, Dad, that's exactly what the bracha is. The bracha is that even though they're not going to be perfect, and even though they're going to make mistakes, and even though their lineage isn't going to be perfect, nonetheless, you and I, we're going to daven for them. Yisimcha Elokim k'Ephraim v'Menashe. Just Ephraim v'Menashe are not perfect, but they're worthy of the bracha. They're worthy of being one of the Shiftei Ka. So too, that should be my child. That even though there are going to be times they're going to disappoint me, and even though there are times they make mistakes, and even though times I'm ready to strangle them, nonetheless, when I come to Friday night, and I put my hands on their head, and I say the words, Yisimcha Elokim for Ephraim Menashe, it's a tefillah. It's a tefillah that even if I feel at that moment, chas v'shalom, that they're not worthy, or that sometimes I do want to strangle them, but I should make them worthy. That this tefillah should make them worthy. This tefillah should turn them from unworthy to worthy. That, says the Sefer Musar HaParsha, is exactly what happened. Ephraim and Menashe were unworthy, but they became worthy. And that's the tefillah, he says, that we give to our children every Friday night. That, to me, is like an earth-shattering, mind-boggling idea. So we saw three ideas in 30 minutes. Idea number one from Rimrei Druk, where the idea is it's not what we do in public, but what we do in private that defines us as Jews. Idea number two from Rabbi Alex Israel is it's not what we're running from, but it has to be what we're running towards. That we're not just bound by a fate, but we share a common destiny, and that definitely, I think, defines our relationship to Eretz Yisrael. And idea number three is why the bracha of Ephraim Menashe. That the same way Yaakov looked at Ephraim Menashe, he thought they were unworthy, and through the tefillah they became worthy. That is the real tefillah that we give to our children Friday night. Whether they're different, not different, disappoint, not disappoint, mistakes, not mistakes, our tefillah is, Hashem, that you should make my children worthy of this bracha. That you should make my children fit the family's values and what we stand for. And that's the real tefillah, says the Sefer Musar HaParsha, that we give to our children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren every Friday night. And with that, I wish everyone a beautiful Shabbat.